Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 on a Tuesday night for Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Welcome to the show. Here we are. It's all about the end being nigh. End times, and in particular, we're looking at the big one, supposedly the big one, on the 21st of this month, 21st of December.
The big 2-1.
2-2-1. 2 plus 1 equals 3.
And oh, my God.
We will be covering that, taking a look at the pros and cons of that. We've also got a couple of prizes to give away.
But before you get into that, I really have to say that's our prediction for the 21st.
What is?
2 plus 1 equals 3.
Yeah.
You're so ahead of yourself, Sonia.
I know.
The prediction has been made, guys. 2 plus 1 equals 3.
So perhaps you have a favourite apocalyptic legend or movie or TV show that you love.
Well, what is going to happen? What's your prediction?
Yeah.
We say number 3. We say number 3 is going to happen on this big day. We have a really awesome celebrity skeptic, and that is Tony. The Tony.
Tony Pittman, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Now,
it was unexpected.
But Jerry saw it coming.
He saw it in his crystal ball.
Yeah, that's where you came from.
Exactly.
The crystal ball.
He's going to help us out, I think, looking at it from a skeptical angle about the whole Mayan, or is it Olmec, or Aztec calendar. What else is happening this evening?
Discussing the Mayan prediction, which is the end of human civilization due to a potentially existential catastrophe.
Existential
catastrophe.
I'm not sure about that. But I'm also doing The Hobbit tonight. So for those who've been looking forward to that film, The Hobbit, yes, an unexpected journey. That's a bit later on in the show.
It's the first review in Australia.
Well, I'm saying it is. But
it is.
Whether it is or not, I'm not sure, but I'm going for that.
This morning.
I know, I saw it this morning.
And no other show is on Tuesday night.
No one's up that early in the
morning.
It's
always tomorrow morning. So we are the first. If you can't wait till tomorrow morning, this is the place to listen for your Hobbit review. Because I actually can't wait to see what you think about it. Like, if it's a good movie, if it's a bad movie,
yeah,
if it's so-so.
Yeah, well, I can tell you.
And that's what's coming up later in the evening. And, yeah, so message him. Kind of want to go to a song before the little break. Relevant to The Hobbit. Because we'll be playing music tonight about...
Yeah.
New Zealand, for some reason.
Is this a New Zealand song?
It's because they're the only survivors after the apocalypse, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. It depends if it's a volcanic end of the world. They'll go up first because they're right on a vent.
Well, Matt was
the whole country's
on a good
vent.
Question, because if it's the Mayan calendar and it dies, does that mean we're on Mayan time or is it Pacific Sea time? Whatever time we're on.
I don't know. It doesn't exist. But anyway.
Oceanic time. Or does it kind of have a wave? It starts with us and just keeps on rolling.
Well, we can find out because NASA put it up on their site. They're very concerned about the whole
thing. What did they put up?
Oh, we'll talk about it soon. You're going to play a track.
You got to listen in.
Yeah.
Yes, this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
I'm John O'Jarrett, geeked out from the United States of America, sends much love to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, the best LGBTQ radio show in all of Australia.
These will be the other casualties of a nuclear war. Physically unmarked, there will almost inevitably be thousands of people suffering from many complex states of fear and shock due to the things they've seen and the things that have happened to them. Many of these people will probably lapse into a state of permanent neurosis because they will totally outnumber the psychiatric services needed to cure them. This, too, will be the legacy of thermonuclear war. For the following 48 hours, an estimated one-third of the entire land surface of Britain would be covered by a total dose of radiation exceeding 10 times the amount needed to kill a man in the open. For many of those within this area who had remained even inside the shelter of their homes, there would be death within 5 weeks. This baby boy has been bitten on the arm by a rat. There are now no medicines or drugs available to prevent the disease, which may well follow.
This is sci-fi and Squeam. I beat you, Midge. I beat you to it.
He was talking about me getting bitten by a
baby
rat.
Boy. Look, that's from 1965. It's called The War Game. It's an actual BBC documentary that was banned because of its, basically, it was incredibly realistic, talking about what would happen in a nuclear strike. Now, of course, it's got nothing to do with the Mayan calendar, but I thought we're looking at end of the world, doomsday stuff, and nuclear annihilation is always a popular one in popular culture, movies and so forth. But that one's actually a doco where it actually tells factual figures and so forth of what would happen to Britain if it was attacked by a thermonuclear device or two.
You have to be careful of those rats.
There must have been
they take over, won't they?
Must have been very uplifting for everybody.
Uplifting?
Yeah.
In such a positive country.
Even now.
Yeah, that's right.
So horrifying as it is, those are some of the, you know, the facts that people would face if it was a nuclear, you know, strike. But of course, the whole thing about the 2012 phenomenon isn't about nuclear strikings, or is it? It's about, it's about that Mayan calendar and the date, or end times date, which is supposed to be 21st.
So, Sonia, for anyone who hasn't heard about this calendar, tell me about it. Is it Anglican? Is it, I don't know, what kind of calendar is it? Does it have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday written on
it? It's round. It's round.
Is it round?
Well, actually, it might be Olmec, which are one of the ancient Mesoamerican cultures from pre-European conquest or conquestador age. We're looking at about 500 to 900 AD, I believe. Now, Tony, you might know a bit more about the Mayan / Olmec calendar. This thing that's, the memes are just going crazy on Facebook and places like that.
Yeah, well, basically, we in the so-called Mayan calendar, the Mayans had units of time that they measured, and basically what happens this Friday on December 21st is that a unit of time, which is about 5,000 years,
5,125 year-long cycles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That 5,125. So that's going to come to an end on Friday. And then, of course, there's just like what happens in the Gregorian calendar, the calendar we follow, at the end of a millennium, a thousand years, you just click over from 1999 to 2000. Yeah. So they just click over to the next cycle. But of course, this provides great fodder for anyone who wants to fearmonger and sell some TV documentaries to the History Channel and sell some books in the process.
Mayan calendars.
Sell some Mayan calendars to
what
create.
What calendar is on my iPhone?
That's the Gregorian,
We've
Gregorian.
All got that.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you follow the Gregorian calendar,
if you follow
what
the Gregorian
happen?
Calendar, December 21st will be December 21st.
Nothing will happen.
It is actually, it is a date of significance because, of course, it is the solstice.
The north.
And in here it's in the south, it's our longest day of the year.
Yeah.
Of daylight, and in the north, it's their shortest day of the year.
Every day I work is the longest day of the year for me.
So, but there's some new age interpretations about the so-called Mesoamerican long count calendar or Mayan calendar, and that is they believe that there will be some inhabitants on the planet Earth which will undergo some spiritual transformations, and that marks the beginning of a new era. I think we've heard this all before, like with the Age of Aquarian and so forth.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I'd say every year probably there's some group out there who's predicting the end of the world, and then the new ages seem to like to attach to these maybe more traditional religions or beliefs or ancient wisdom as they would see it and say, oh yeah, the Mayans knew more about this than us and they predicted blah, blah, blah.
That's why they're dead.
Well, as a culture, as a civilization they are, but as a culture and as a people, they still exist.
Oh yeah, that's
they're
right.
Still, and they're Mesoamerican native indigenous people, so they still exist. There are Mayans, they're just not Olmecs anymore. I believe Olmecs also gone.
No, I think that's right, yeah.
But, yeah, so it's a writing system. It's something, I guess, because of its exoticness, that's always something that's going to flare up and attach, you know, people will attach that kind of exotic romanticness about something that is non-Western, and that's always going to get the New Age people to jump on board.
And the New Age is just kind of recycle these things every few years, because back in 2003 they had another prediction, which was that this supposed rogue planet that actually no one had ever spotted, but the New Agers knew about it, called Nibiru.
Nibiru is on a collision with the planet Earth.
Yeah, apparently. And it was supposed to hit Earth.
No one's found it.
Exactly. No, no one's scientist actually seen anyway. It. It was supposed to hit Earth in 2003, but when it didn't do that, they're kind of like, oh, we can recycle that idea and put it with the whole Mayan calendar, and we can
on
say Nibiru is coming at the end of the Mayan calendar.
Good old
calendar.
Nibiru. And that's it goes right. back
Nibiru
to...
Nibiru is coming. Nibiru is coming.
But all the same, NASA, actually, some people at NASA, some of the scientists, are quite worried. Not so much about it not happening, but basically about the tremendous amount of pressure and harm that could be caused to people's mental health because of stress and so forth. There are people already going out there and, you know, stretching their budgets even further by buying things they don't need, like extra water and extra supplies and, you know...
A country in recession.
Like, they don't need it.
All that stress, and they need to keep their jobs at NASA, so they're stressed anyway.
Yeah, but they're already stressed.
They're already strong.
Because, you know, it's being mixed in with the Sumerian culture and ideas and the Nibiru thing and the New Age, you know, extremely notoriously imaginative, over-imaginative. So NASA have already announced that it's not going to happen. So the best we can do is, I mean, just... chill out.
Just
not
go
worry
with
about
the
it.
Flow, bro.
What will be interesting, though, is after December 21st, when everyone wakes up on the 22nd, all those New Age authors and things who were selling books, what are they going to say? Like, they'll have some excuse, or they'll just pick another date,
It'll be another date.
10 years in the future or something, but they can sell another pile of books.
Maybe next year. This time next year. We'll have another one. Anyway.
Oh, it was... 2021 on the 12th of the 12th.
Oh,
the 12th,
they got confused.
Whatever,
they got the numbers mixed around.
Dyslexic.
Yeah.
It was the 13th of the 13th of the 13th. The 13th month we've never had.
That planet that is going to get us. That planet. But I have to say, I think the planet that will crash into us is Pluto getting revenge.
Pluto's not a planet anymore.
Exactly, and that's why it's pissed. Annoyed.
We blame Disney.
He's going to show us that he really is a planet. And
he really is manufactured by Disney.
Whack.
If I'm not a planet, you aren't either.
Exactly. If I can't be a planet, you can't either. Exactly.
Well, this is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. What do you think? Do you think the end is coming on the 21st? Have you got any favourite apocalyptic movies or shows or...
Did anyone see that
stories?
Glee episode where they're talking about the apocalypse?
I didn't see
I
that
heard
one.
My housemate watching it. I think
really?
The most recent Christmas episode, they're talking about, like,
oh, that's
the
cute.
End is coming or something while singing Christmas carols.
Well, you can SMS us if you wish to, so get to it.
And now we're going to a track. This is called Journey to the Sun by Chapter.
Yeah,
and now
enjoy
this. This is because... a planet's going to crash into us.
Well, some of the favourite apocalyptic films and stories is the Earth is being drawn, magnetically drawn into the sun and will disintegrate.
Just casually getting drawn.
But the sun is getting bigger, so that might happen in a few billion years.
In a few billion years, yeah.
Jerry, are you out there somewhere? Can you hear us? Will the sun crash into us, or did we crash into the sun?
You are the sun, Mitch.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Armin Shimmerman. You're listening to Sci-Fi Squeam on Joy 94.9. Live long and be prosperous.
My dear Frodo, you asked me once if I had told you everything there was to know about my adventures. While I can honestly say I have told you the truth, I may not have told you all of it.
Bilbo Baggins, I'm looking for someone to share in an adventure.
I can't just go running off into the blue. I am a Baggins.
Wait!
Of Bagend.
Bilbo, allow me to introduce Feely, Keely, Oin, Loin, Darlin, Barlin, Dory. And the leader of our company,
Thorin Oakenshield.
The trees like torches blazed with light.
I cannot guarantee his safety.
Understood.
Nor will I be responsible for his fate.
You'll have a tale or two to tell when you come back.
Can you promise that I will come back?
No. And if you do, you will not be the same.
My name is Bilbo Bagginses.
Bagginses. What is that? Bagginses. Precious.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. The Hobbit and Unexpected Journey. Okay, is this the return of the king? Is this a sign that Peter Jackson's back? Is this also the best movie of 2012? Well, I would say it is a yes, but it's also a really big no. It is cinematically a historical coup, for starters, for Jackson and his Wingnut Films and Weta team, in that it is actually the first ever time when it comes to new technology that the new technology is used in the history of our lifetime, in any case. The new 48 frames per second. The sped up camera recordings, shot by shot. It's a change in technology that's been a long time coming. This is the very first film as well to use this new aspect, and it is of course groundbreaking. So congratulations on that level, and it does go to Jackson and this team without a doubt. They are the first. But is it a good movie? Is this what makes a good film now or in the future? A movie that is over 2 hours long in any case, and we've also been waiting for it for some time. There's been so much hype in the past year of 2012. Is it worth the acclaim that it has already received even before its global release? Or are we just showering praise on a film that is really all about cinematic pioneering and daringness, which Jackson, of course, and his intrepid gang of movie makers from Aotearoa do so well? Now, it is a bit of a gamble, I think, but no, not in a bad way. It all depends on the fans, mind you, and how they swallow the new technical changes and how they're going to respond to the new look. That's what I'm thinking. So to me, it did look like, when I was sitting in the theatre today, like watching a 3D movie in high definition. Like I was watching something I could watch at home on a very, very big TV screen. So it's almost like the best of Blu-ray in a movie theatre. And as an intro to the film, the manager of Roadshow Australia, who are the distributors in Oz, have actually said that only 52 movie houses will be able to play The Hobbit in the 48 frames per second. They'll also be in 3D, which this film was. Okay, so overall, there's only about 300 cinemas that are geared for 3D at the present time. But let's get to the story of The Hobbit and Unexpected Journey. Now, the plot reads pretty much like a revenge story, and a vengeful dwarf called Thorin Oakenshield. He's king of the dwarves, and he wants to forge ahead to return to Lonely Mountain, where their ancestral home of the dwarves is. But to do this, he needs a crack team, an A-team, or a dwarf team, and a particular hobbit to help him out, Bilbo Baggins. He also has the aid of a great wizard. Yep, that guy, Gandalf the Grey. Well, his beard is grey because, remember, this is 60 years before the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Now, Gandalf is pretty much the mischief maker wizard we all know, but even more so in this particular story, this being the prequel, I guess you could say, to Lord of the Rings. The book, of course, was written in 1937, and its whole guise and subject was, well, projected for children. So remember, this is a children's story. This is not like Lord of the Rings at all, and that trilogy made into films. This is chiefly made for kids. So let's just try and keep that in mind if any of us get disappointed. Now, Gandalf, of course, invites unknowingly to Bilbo Baggins a whole team of 13 dwarves who are taking on, or who want to take on, Smaug. Smaug being, of course, the evil dragon that has taken the dwarves home in the mountain there, Lonely Mountain, okay, or Erebor. He's taken all their gold, and for the last few years they have been pretty much unable to take it back. Not from lack of wanting to, but lack of resources. And like people who are homeless, it's pretty hard to find a home when you haven't had one for 60 years or more. So they arrive, these boisterous companions. They're very hungry and they eat pour Bilbo's larder out completely. They also do a great job at circus performing acts, and there's even time for plate juggling and flinging those about, and there's even songs in this one. So yes, there are dwarves singing, but this is not Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. This is Bilbo and the 13 Dwarves. Okay. Now, on saying that, once you get used to the idea that this is probably more projected towards kids, I think you would really enjoy it. Unfortunately, the screening I was at, there was only one child and they were pretty, you know, pretty quiet and docile, probably because I was surrounded by reviewers and people from the media and big grown-ups. But I can understand how delightful this movie would be for kids. You know, it's rollicking, it's fun, it has a couple of musical tracks. The dwarves are gorgeous, I have to say, even with their big fake noses and crazy hairdos, hair extensions, plenty of those. They're still believable and charming creatures and endearing characters. Okay, so back to the story. So the dwarves plan their dangerous mission or journey, which is more of an adventure for young Bilbo, who decides to go along. He goes, what the hell, instead of being a hermit, living in the Shire in a comfortable, sheltered existence, while he's still able and still young, he will go with the dwarves. Now, he doesn't want to originally, but he takes up with the gang. So the challenges begin. Dangers are everywhere, from orc scouts bent on capturing the leader of the dwarves, Torin, to unsatiated revenge from evil white giant orcs. There's also dangers from giants made from rocks who bash and fight each other while oblivious to wee dwarves climbing on their granite bodies to escape. There's all sorts of underworld devilish orcs and a monstrous king of the orcs or king of the goblins who wants to capture them all. There is horse-eating trolls or pony-eating trolls, more orcs and vicious wargs. However, the ever-impending threat of doom never slows down the dwarves. They keep going because their homeland is their focus, their lost ancestral home of Erebor. So that's where they're heading, and that will be where the next film takes up. Now, with the help of the aging wizard Gandalf and, you know, seemingly helpless Bilbo, they manage to get along on their journey and survive. Well, that's the context of it. But amongst it all is the usual CGI for the film. The last three films, of course, were advancements in CGI, and these ones take it even further with the technology, superseding those. The world of invention from where to works, the puppetry, the mastery, the magic that they're able to create with special effects are enchanting. There is a fantastic Smaug, for example, the dragon that takes all the gold as hostage from the dwarves. And even though you don't clearly see the dragon at the beginning, the threat of annihilation, or should I say evaporation and extermination, or incineration is a word that's used a lot in the film, is pretty apparent with the flames and so forth. So yeah, we're looking forward to more Smaug in the next one, the sequel following this. Another great character, another great individual, was the Goblin King, played by Aussie actor Barry Humphries, looking a bit like he has a giant testicle bag on his chin, a bloody huge one. That was pretty amusing. And the nasty, vengeful white orc from hell, who wants to smite the dwarf leader Torin. It's a revenge situation, basically. He's both majestic and horrifying at the same time. Incredible. Also to the casting of Martin Freeman, I think there's a lot on his shoulders, so I didn't feel very engaged with his particular acting and his character. Sir Ian McKellen is as good as ever. He does look older, though, from what he did in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, so I don't know if they need to do something with the makeup there. Richard Armitage is a winner for this one as Torin Oakenshield, the leader of the dwarves. Even though he's a little guy with a big nose, certainly he has all the character, and I think he really played it incredibly well. Fantastic, fantastic performances from him. Of course, Andy Serkis's Gollum, perhaps a little too much Gollum, and I found that I was getting a bit bored. I wonder if kids would get bored with that too. You've got Aidan Turner as Keeley and Dean O'Gorman the Kiwi as Feely. Mark Hedlow, another great Kiwi actor, having a part to play as a dwarf as Dory. Those three characters are brilliant and those three actors are pretty amazing. Benedict Cumberbatch, who I believe will be the man for 2013 in the Star Trek film coming up. He is Smaug, believe it or not, and the Necromancer, but you don't see enough of him, unfortunately. I think the praise to the cast would go there, but my standout, I would say, would be Richard Armitage as Torin. And of course, an ex-Doctor Who, Sylvester McCoy, as Radagast the Brown. He's an old sort of feral wizard that lives in the bush and an amazing character with his rabbit sleigh. Rabbits pulling a sleigh with him on it. They're amazing creatures. Plus the birds that live in his hat and pooping all over his face. So those were the highlights for me. The Hobbit is number one of a series of three epic fantasy adventure films that are directed and co-written and produced by Peter Jackson, based on the J.R.R. Tolkien fantasy novel The Hobbit, which came out in 1937. So these are very much aimed at kids, more so than the last three films that we're used to. I'm giving The Hobbit an Unexpected Journey a 3 out of 5. That may be because I'm a little bit too old now for this, I don't know. But it's also because of the high definition and the fact that, like I said before, it was a little bit like TV in a big room. Maybe that's wrong. Look, it is clear and crisp looking, so much so that you think, wow, I am in the backyard of someone's house out at Matamata or something in New Zealand. And New Zealand looks as lush and as beautiful as ever. So it was great to see some of the native trees there again and realizing that that country doesn't need landscape-wise CGI. So I missed Frodo. There was a little bit of Elijah Wood at the beginning, but it's hard to put Martin Freeman up there because I think I'm used to the adventures and heroic nature of Frodo. I'm looking forward to the next one, and hopefully the Bilbo Baggins character will see him get more ballsy and get braver as the story continues. I think kids will love this, and the wonderful messages are clear about loyalty, about what it's like to be homeless, and about what drives and pushes people to become passionate and suffering and all those sort of things that I guess children need to find out about. And this is a good way to do that, and an entertaining way as well. So 3 out of 5 from me. And it's produced by Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh, and of course Carolyn Cunningham. Screenplay by Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, Peter Jackson, and Guillermo del Toro is in the credits there as well, because he was supposed to helm it originally. Music by Howard Shore, of course, and it's out through New Line Cinema, MGM, Wingnut Films, distributed by Warner Brothers, and Roadshow here in Australia. It will be playing everywhere on the 26th, Boxing Day. And that used to be something that was always exciting about Boxing Day, would be, when's the next Peter Jackson film coming out? So I'm sure people will enjoy it. For me, if I had kids, I would definitely take them along.
Have they announced love it. When the next movie will be released?
Well, I believe the one after that is going to be...
Soon?
No, they've already filmed most of it.
Well, I know I just assume they film one big movie and then cut it up.
Well, that's what he did. That's why he was unusual, to save money and everything. That's how they did The Lord of the Rings, back to back.
Yeah.
So I think they've done most of the block filming for the one that comes out in 2013, this time next year, or the 14th of December, because it's already been released in the States, The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. So the next one, particularly about taking on the dragon, Desolation of Smaug, that's December 2013.
Oh, yeah.
And then July of 2014 will be the last one in the trilogy.
That was an amazing review.
Is that okay?
It's all right. It's all right.
Nauseous, but not by the 48 frames per second or the 3D.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy, and you heard it here first on Joy FM with Sci-Fi and Scream and Sonia.
Oh, we did have a quick message from Chappelle. Yeah, she says, is Aidan Turner the original vamp from Being Human? Yes, he is. He's hot.
Chappelle!
Yeah,
this
I love his character.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hello, I'm Bruce Boxleitner, and you are listening to...
Sci-Fi and Scream.
She said it, Sci-Fi and Scream.
On Joy 94.9.
On Joy 94.9. See, I can follow a script.
Oh, you're good. You're an actor. You're good.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And for anyone who has just tuned in, we are talking about the Mayan calendar. So what song was that, Sonia?
That was All the Trees of the Field Will Clap Their Hands. And it's from Sufjan Stevens' album from 24.
Beautiful.
2004.
Beautiful.
And, yeah, Sufjan Stevens' Seven Swans. It talks about apocalyptic stuff.
I was imagining it. I could feel it.
All that kind of Armageddon, getting out of here, all that kind of stuff. And he plays the banjo.
Really?
I love the banjo.
I didn't know that.
No?
Well, I couldn't hear it in the song.
No, I'm joking.
I gotcha. Ding, ding.
So the Mayan calendar, all right, we've got Tony Pittman in the house. He is a skeptic, so we'll just warn everyone that he doesn't believe in anything. That's what skepticism is about. Technically, that's what it is actually about.
Skeptic alert, skeptic alert.
Skeptic alert.
That's right.
So apocalyptic, what's your favourite apocalypse, Tony? You've got a favourite apocalyptic movie there, I think?
Favourite apocalyptic movie? Well, I do like 12 Monkeys.
Ah, yes. 12 Monkeys from Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
That is a bit of a favourite of mine as well. I think probably up there. 12 Monkeys. Sci-fi from Terry Gilliam, who used to be in the, of course, with those
Monty
guys,
Python.
The Monty Python crew, based on Chris Marker's 1962 short film La Jetée. It stars Bruce Willis, the man, Madeleine Stowe, and Brad Pitt in an extraordinary performance with Christopher Plummer and David Morse in supporting roles. It's a very interesting film about, I guess, eco-terrorism, biological warfare, end-of-the-world stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So the
not basic, like the Mayan calendar at all, but...
No, because the way the world... Well, the way that humans are largely destroyed in 12 Monkeys is through a virus.
Yes, unleashed.
And actually, I think... if people saw last year the reboot of the Planet of the Apes, the
Rise of the Planet of the Apes,
the final credit sequence, if you remember, is kind of similar to what happens in 12 Monkeys.
It's been a long time since I've seen 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, but basically, 12 Monkeys, they fly. The guy buys an airline ticket. The guy who's got the virus, who wants to kill everybody, buys an airline ticket that flies to like 12 capital cities all over the world. So he's flying from like New York to London to Kinshasa to Tokyo or whatever. Which is, and it's a very similar idea to the end of which Timbuktu?
No. Tiwamutu.
Tiwamutu.
Very, very popular
All
place.
Those major airline hubs.
Yeah.
Which is like, spoiler alert, which is like the end of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Maybe I've revealed too much.
Maybe you have. Tut, tut, tut. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yes, this is Sci-Fi and Squeam. And like I said, we were looking at some of the apocalyptic and doomsday fantasies, I would say, that are out there. And basically... When NASA were asked if there were any threats to the Earth in 2012, basically the answer they gave back was the world will not end in 2012. Our planet, they say, has been getting along just fine for the last 4 billion years, and they think that business will continue for a few more billion.
At least. Highly likely. It is interesting, though, when people talk about the end of the world, like, what do they actually mean? Do they mean just that a lot of humans will die and that civilization will end? Do they mean that all humans will die but other life will go on? Do they mean all life will die but the planet will just still be a rock? Or do they mean like that somehow the planet Earth will explode into dust? And
I don't know. Do they mean meteorites? There's all sorts of meteorite popular culture references. That's been used in Doomsday since the early Christians could see that stars moved, basically comets and things like that. Or would it be, like we discussed before, an infection of some massive scale, so human error or human involvement? Or will it be, a natural disaster on the planet Earth where this giant earthquakes, massive sort of upheaval as such? I mean, there's so many things that end of the world could be.
Indeed. Will it be,
Friday?
The rise of artificial intelligence and the robots
like iRobot,
too smart and they decide to take over?
iRobot, of course, the Will Smith movie based on the Isaac Asimov. Probably not as good as the book, obviously. But that's an old trope that's used again and again, is artificial intelligence wants to have its wicked way with us real people. So that's a theme that you see a lot in sci-fi and popular culture as such. Yes. Now, we do have to wrap up the show shortly. But thinking about end of the world stuff, I have got something from Julie Delphi.
Don't confess on air. I need to let it out.
Let it out. What do you think, Mitch?
What do I think?
Yeah, about end of the world. Do you have a favourite film or something?
I don't think zombie apocalypse would be fun, because I'd run out of toilet paper pretty fast. So I'd be happy with something kind of instant.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
I would like Waterworld or something. You know, like how...
They're going to make that into a television series, apparently.
Oh, that would be horrible.
That's a bit scary, but anyway.
I'm sorry, but that's the end of the world
on
its own.
That will bring about the end of the world.
And this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
In a world fraught with corruption...
Did you just say the F word?
Did he say the S word?
Young man, did you just say the Q word?
Four young boys united by fate.
The machinery of the V-chip emits a small shock whenever an obscenity is uttered.
This isn't fair, you stand up!
Torn apart by destiny.
Viva la resistance!
Somewhere between love and honor. Between courage and not courage. Between Kansas and Utah. There lies South Park. Kyle Broflowski, Stan Marsh.
But this is going to be the best movie ever. It's a foreign film from Canada.
Saddam Hussein.
Is sex the only thing that matters to you?
I love you.
Kenny McCormick.
I'm
Big Gay Al.
Super! Thanks for asking.
And Eric Cartman. Now, all hell is breaking loose.
My fragile little mind.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Well, that's the end of the world for us, I think. That was South Park, Bigger, Longer and Uncut from 1999.
It's also the end of something else.
What?
The end of a show.
End of a show. Da-da-da. All right, so next week we're doing a Christmas. Yes, indeed. It is Christmas, I believe, next week. So we've got Dina Curry from Guy-Fi Podcast and Nave Stones from Watcher Podcast to take you through your Christmas day at nighttime with all the fun and frolics and mayhem and murder and mystery and sci-fi on Sci-Fi and Scream. Thanks,
amazing.
Tony, for coming in.
Thanks,
Tony Pittman is the skeptic.
Mitch. It's been pleasure.
I hope you have a very happy 21st. Of December.
Yes, and happy
and we'll
summer
be
solstice
here.
To you and to all listeners.
That's right.
That's
okay.
Right.
Mitch.
I won't be here next week.
No, okay. Well,
me and
on.
Santa. We're friends.
Moving on.
Don't worry about the Mayan predictions.
Yeah, no, everyone just chill. Come on, guys.
Just chill. I mean, they didn't even have telescopes. So
enjoy
the
memes and don't take it seriously. That's the message,
exactly.
I think.
Because then you can never be wrong.
There's always plenty of fodder out there. Lots of wonderful apocalyptic movies and TV. Ones on war and pandemics. Failures of modern technology. Astronomical ones. There's aliens that do terrible things to us, like Independence Day and Mars attacks. There's all sorts of environmental disaster movies. Heaps out there to enjoy on Friday.
Cozy catastrophe.
Oh, what is a cozy catastrophe again?
Cozy catastrophe is like the apocalypse happens, people survive, they come off completely clean, and they're free from society. Like, they become, rather than distraught and like kind of 28 days later where, you know, they're struggling to live, they actually live better because they're away from society.
Oh, good on them.
And so that's cozy catastrophe.
They just go fishing or something.
They live in hippie communes and make their own goat cheese.
Oh, you know it. You know it. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together.
But human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.